This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Believe it or for, the year 1984 was declared the year of the father in America. That was headlined by Newsweek on October 31st, 1994. But unfortunately, while attempting to bring focus back to fatherhood and men, it actually served more like a postmortem for fathers. And unfortunately, that's what happens almost every time Congress decides to give a recognition to something like the year of the Bible in 1989. Why? Well, because the Bible was heading all the way to the museums in America. How about fathers? Well, in 2016, we find a very interesting thing that developed. While accepting a Best Director Emmy Award, Jill Soloway addressed Hollywood as the culture-defining power of the United States and the Western world. And here's what she said. Topple the patriarchy. Topple the patriarchy. It was in effect a declaration of war against both men and fathers, and by implication, boys themselves, a repudiation of fatherhood itself, and the statistics tell the tale of the revolution that has come as a result. For instance, let me give you a hint here. According to both the CDC, the DOJ, the Department of Homeland Security, and the Census Bureau, 30% of America's children who live apart from their fathers account for these numbers. 63% of teen suicides, 70% of juvenile incarcerations, 71% of high school dropouts, 75% of children in drug abuse centers, 86% of rapists, 85% of youths in prison, 85% of children with behavioral disorders, 90% of homeless and runaway children, 90% of children living in poverty, and 100% of gang members. And guess who takes the brunt of it? Boys, who are supposed to become men. So today on Viewpoint, we're going to talk about this matter of men in America. Neglect of men, according to our guest today, is having a devastating consequence on our families, the economy, and more. And today you have the privilege, or however you want to call it, of having two lawyers discuss this, one in Philadelphia, the other in Richmond, Virginia. Larry DeMarco, a lawyer par excellence there in Philadelphia, who has joined the fray with regard to somehow trying to bring recognition to men and boys and highlight their need in our society, not only in America, but all over the world. Larry, it's good to have you on the program.
It's good to be here, Chuck. Thank you for the invitation, and thank you for that great introduction.
Well, I'll tell you, this matter of boys and men has been heavy on my heart. I remember back, and I'm not sure what your connection is with this gentleman, but going back about 40 years, my wife and I had the privilege of associating very closely with a dear friend of ours who had not yet formed a organization that became famous in our country called Focus on the Family. Dr. James Dobson wrote several books concerning boys, and they caught the attention of people all across the country, particularly in the Christian community. And from there, and Dare to Discipline, his ministry through Focus on the Family catapulted all over the country. It is now deemed to be one of the most profound and leading voices of evangelical Christendom in the country. But he's fading away because of his age. But we go back to that period of time, and we find there was a problem that was seen to be developing 40 years ago right here in the good old US of A. How could that be happening?
I am more aware of the more recent authors that picked up after your friend, Mr. Dobbs there. So I'm more aware of the more recent developments. That's certainly a loaded question. More recently, what I've been brought in and how I've become aware is more of what I call an overcorrection, where, you know, that the society had been kind of hard on women, not believing some of their complaints and whatnot.
Okay.
And I think that when you have victimhood and you have a political group that stands up for themselves, naturally there's an overcorrection.
Okay.
So, and I am learning from you, and I appreciate the history and the background that you've given. I'm more aware of how women in taking what, you know, striving for equality overshoot. You know, the Me Too movement became to believe all women. And so you have.
Yeah, believe only women.
Only women, and all women is exactly correct.
Yeah.
I am more aware of replay, and of course, my recent personal experience became a passion to help reform family court.
Larry, can I interrupt for just a moment? Are you on a cell phone?
Yeah, and I can if I can.
Okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to just keep that instrument right in front of your face because you keep dropping off, okay?
Yes.
Good. Wonderful. Okay, give us that good lawyer-like expression there as you chat here today and get, we want to get the message across. So I can understand exactly what you're saying. The feminist movement kind of launched all of that back in the 1970s. And then, as you said, as it began to carry on and carry on and carry on, it began to be the message of the day, so to speak, and men began to get short shrift, didn't they?
Sure. Women were more organized, and they were, you know, one thing that I'd like to point out with our movement, trying to support men and boys, my women friends often push back and say, oh, gender equality for men? Are you kidding? Is that a joke? So,
they're the Jill Soloways of the world today. They're the liberals primarily, and they can't stand to have equality. They want superiority.
That's true, but some well-intended. I am an optimist. I like to see the good in people, and I see that it's women who are still suffering from post-trauma, both. Human beings suffer from trauma, and when they are fighting for equality, there's a natural tendency not to dominate or hurt others, but to overcorrect. And that's what
in other words, to plead your cause with a vengeance, so to speak. Well, isn't that kind of what lawyers are known for? Trial lawyers. I mean, let's be real about it. Pleading their cause. And sometimes with a vengeance, and we have to be very careful as professing Christian lawyers that we don't overcharge the opposition and lean into areas that actually even lead us into, almost disrespect and disregard of the law. And doing things that we ought not to do. Well, the same thing is, it's not just women out there, and it's not just men, and it's not just lawyers. Pastors alone are also responsible for these kinds of things. So that having been said, the groundwork having been laid, we want to talk about the International Council for Men and Boys, which you are the executive director of. We want to talk about that, what it means, where you're going, what it is that you can do about this problem, and let's see if we can get some unanimity here. We'll be right back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Many men back away from a fight. Now, that may come strange from someone who is rather known to be quite masculine here on this side of the ledger. And I am not prone to want to be in a fight. On the other hand, if you're a trial lawyer, you better be prepared somehow to be in the fight. Now, the problem with this is that a fellow by the name of Adam, way back in the Old Testament, got himself involved in this dilemma. He really did. And here's how it goes. God created Adam in his image. In the image of God created he him. And he gave him responsibility over the planet. And then he created a helpmeet for him. Her name was Eve. And after Eve and Adam developed their relationship there, they had an encounter. An encounter with another, a third party. And the third party, called Satan or the serpent, tested Eve. He didn't go to Adam. He went to Eve. And he tested her out and asked a famous question that echoes down to this very day. Hath God said? Hath God said? Well, when he did that, Eve responded. She says, well, yeah, he said we should eat, not eat of the good, fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, that tree, but we should eat only of the tree. We can't eat of that tree. And so the deceiver responded to her and said, well, yes, but God knew that when he told you that, if you ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you're going to just be like God. So she looked at the fruit, and it looked pretty good to her, and her senses overcharged what she knew from God through her husband. And so she prevailed upon her husband. Well, Adam, as with many men, didn't want to fight. He didn't want a battle. So he said, whatever, and he took the fruit as well. And the rest is history. So we see a situation right back there in the Garden of Eden from the get-go where there was a tension between men and women. In fact, God actually said in Genesis chapter 3 that that would be a continuing problem throughout history. He actually also said through one of the prophets that in the end times, women and children would rule over nations. Now, all that having been said, that being the environment from God's perspective, how do we deal with this situation with men right now being denigrated, losing their influence not only in society as a whole, but even in their homes? How do we deal with this? And is it possible that our guest today, Larry DeMarco, a lawyer, representing the International Council for Men and Boys, can give us some answers, some insights in this regard? Larry, that's a big issue, my friend. Any hope for us?
Well, sure is, but part of the issue is why that our organization exists in the first place. Thank you for bringing awareness to this issue and our organization, the International Council for Men and Boys. We are raising 12 awareness of 12 areas of male inequality, and we are trying to change the narrative. When society thinks of gender equality, the first thing they think is gender equality for women. And as a result, millions and billions of funds go toward women's equality, women's issues. And in some areas of the world where women face brutal conditions such as genital mutilation, forced marriage, mandatory hijabs, getting stoned if they transgress in a way.
Well, India, the Muslim world, those things are notorious.
Sure. And so a lot of these, a lot of that awareness and a lot of that funding is so important. There won't be enough. And we're glad that we do it. And we as men support our sisters with their fight for equality.
Right.
The issue is that in more Western countries like Australia, England, Canada, and the United States, and others, that life is tough for both genders, and boys are facing a crisis, and men and boys are falling behind and also suffer in the manner that women suffer. But because the narrative is that we only need to worry about gender equality for women, men who are facing a lot of similar issues have no resources.
Well, actually, those issues are being created by the counter movement concerning women. And I'm not against the women issue. I think you're trying to give a very fair picture here, and I accept that. But in the overstepping or overcharging to try to bring equality for women, it actually is ending up demeaning men, even overtly, isn't it?
I try to be optimistic, and my point is, I don't want to, like, I guess, let me put it this way, Chuck. I worry about the solution, and if you are right, literally, with which how you phrase it, to me, I try not to use that in my messaging to create more of that pushback, because I think we're always going to have that tension between the genders, and we're always going to feel like we don't have enough to solve those unique problems of each gender. So I try and keep those discussions separate. I want to, for our purposes today, I want to acknowledge your point.
Right.
And that, so I have nothing, I certainly will not say no to what you're suggesting.
Right. Well, you're promoting a particular organization, and I understand that. That's why you're here on the air, to promote the International Council for Men and Boys. And my understanding is that toward the end of November, you actually... there was actually a declaration of Men's Day, so to speak, all over the world. Is that right?
There was. On November 19th is since 1999, it has been International Men's Day.
Mm-hmm.
March is Women's History Month. So just like there was Mother's Day,
okay.
Just like there was Mother's Day before Father's Day.
Everybody gets a day. Hey, Larry, I have a question. What is your day?
Sure. Let's say my day is November. Well, my birthday is December 3rd. but our day for my organization is November is Men's Equality Month.
Okay.
Your initial question.
All right.
So to you.
The organization is International Council for Men and Boys. Sounds an awful lot like the acronym for an ICBM missile. ICMB. And when I tried to Google it, that's where I ended up with ICBM instead of ICMB. But tell us a little bit more about the International Council for Men and Boys. Who founded it?
Sure. I would say that our founder is the president, Ed Bartlett, and the company, the parent organization, is the Center for Prosecutorial Integrity. So they were around about 15 years ago, and they realized that unfair prosecution or false allegations and innocent people being put away, a lot of those problems happened in inter-partner issues, divorce, and conflict between men and women. So then it developed into something, a group called the Coalition. Actually, there's only one group, the Center for Prosecutorial Integrity, but we had different web pages. One was the Coalition to End Domestic Violence, which was a gender-neutral way of looking at problems between the sexes, and not just, you know, that always believe women or, you know, just teach police to always arrest the man when he has two black eyes and she may have wrists that were red around her wrist because he's holding her wrist to try and stop her from hitting it. So it's a more gender-neutral way of looking at what happens between men and boys. And the group was a little aggressive with its messaging, and we wanted to form a group that was more inclusive, more kind. You're hearing in my message a more inclusive way of looking at both.
All right.
We just want to change that narrative to – include men in resources.
Let me give you a word of caution, if I might. I would urge you to avoid the word inclusive. And the reason for it is because it is a trigger word that includes far more than what you're talking about.
Fair enough.
So I would urge you to say, you know, what we want to do is treat the desire for men and women to have equality in the society fairly, equitably, and to work that out with integrity. Avoid that word inclusivity, because I can tell you our listeners already reacted to it, I'm sure. So,
well, I ask for forgiveness on that. I will make my best effort.
Well, as Jesus said, if you won't forgive others their trespasses, neither will he forgive you. So anyway...
I'm sensitive to trigger words, and I appreciate I know you know your listeners.
Well, so, you and I, we're lawyers, and words are our game, right?
Sure, absolutely. No doubt. That's why I respect your input and your comments.
Larry, what kind of practice did you have?
I had a personal injury, workers' compensation, and accident law practice.
Okay.
And that was my loss leader, and I ended up giving, you know, free advice to every family law issue and, you know, any other problem my client had.
Yeah.
And so I've been a social worker at heart my entire life, so I feel like I'm in my true calling in serving men and boys and trying to reform family court and all issues.
Well, I'll tell you, I relate exactly to what you said, because actually 40% of my practice was personal injury. And 40% was family law. And I was in the largest family law court in the nation, the Los Angeles Superior Court System. So when you're in that, you see things in ways that the rest of the people don't see. And you see, for instance, a judge out of the Pasadena Superior Court in California wrote a letter about 40 years ago to the Pasadena Star News. And it was a plea to the people that were being served by that major courthouse, please stop making your false allegations concerning child abuse. Stop making them. We know what you're trying to do. We know you're trying to use it to gain custody of the children. Stop it, because it's destroying your families. And when a judge comes out and makes such a passionate plea, you know there's something going on that isn't good for the family, don't you?
Certainly. And that issue is what really formed our organizations.
I believe that. That's why I brought it up. That's why I brought it up. Yeah, absolutely. So we know what's been going on. It's not a mystery to us. On the other hand, it's a world in which our citizenry, the people that we're pleading with even right now through this radio program and all that you're doing, are dealing with. We have to deal with the reality that is before us. Now, you say that there are 12 particular areas that are jeopardizing men at this time. What are they?
Sure. I'm just going to list them without going into them.
Good.
Education. Yeah. And then we can go into your question. You bring out what you want to bring out.
Sure.
After that. Education, health, boys, which is more of a catch-all, false allegations, victims of violence, parenting, criminal system, partner abuse, homelessness, workplace, injury and death, reproductive rights, and media bias. Those are the 12.
Okay. Well, I wrote down four. I probably should have written down seven because they're all very real. Let's talk about the education thing, because that's the easier one for us to talk about, I think. What's the problem with education?
Boys are underperforming in education and face higher illiteracy rates in not only the United States, but almost all countries surveyed. So you have, by the age of 10, you have far more boys not being able to read at a grade level, at the appropriate level, than girls.
All right. I agree with that. In fact, with the ministry that we're engaged with, Save America Ministries, and this program that's been on the air now for just under 30 years, live every single day, what I've discovered is that men are not reading. And because the men are not reading, the boys are not reading, because they're following their fathers. And so you have men that profess to be Christians that refuse to read the Bible. So what do? They leave it up to their wives to read the Bible. They leave it up to their wives to spiritually educate the children. And so men are defaulting because they refuse to be part of educating themselves and their kids. I want you to respond to that after the break. We'll be right back, friends. This is Viewpoint. Viewpoint does determine destiny, and you can see how destiny is being determined by our very viewpoints.
There is so much more about Chuck Chrismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
A man and a father's greatest desire, that is for most men anyway, be that respected by their wife and be trusted by their children. But each of those desires is facing near catastrophic destruction from the assault of a postmodern God-despising culture. Now, why is that? How is it that even in the educational realm, men are falling behind and their boys are falling behind even the more so? Our special guest, Larry DeMarco, representing a non-governmental organization called International Council for Men and Boys. Why is that, Larry?
I look to the fact that people don't stay married. And they don't stay married because of things that you are well aware about. I really don't have to go on. I don't have to go on to your listener, you know, to your
exactly.
listeners about that. But another thing, aside from the decline of morality, is that people are trying. And partly because of the decline of morality, people are looking for more than our parents had before. The me generation is looking for emotion, passion, fulfillment, making me happy, and they're looking for emotional relationships that it's a new kind of storybook, fairy tale ending where love is. For me, it's for me to feel good and my happiness, fulfillment, and they don't understand that
responsibility,
it takes effort, compromise, and actually communication skills to get along in an emotional, fulfilling relationship. Or to what we're looking for, we've been taught morality by our God loving parents, but we're looking for more. Then what we don't have to marry for necessity or need because we're in a society of plenty. So people, both now, men and women, can now leave. They don't need each other anymore, or they think they don't, So if it's not working and it's too hard to fix, we walk away.
So it's the hot pursuit of self and the me generation.
That's right. That's right. And then we get butchered in family court. We get set apart. Against each other, and then it causes more trauma and pain, latchkey kids, and, of course, number three is boys, the boy crisis, which is father absence.
And, you know, the number one, in fact, in my book, Hearts of the Fathers, Leaving a Legacy That Lasts, I set out all the statements, the quotes for the past 25, 30 years concerning this matter of fatherlessness. And guess what the conclusion is for both secular and Christian spokespersons? They all say that fatherlessness is the number one social crisis in our country and that every other social issue that is talked about issues out of fatherlessness. What say you?
I couldn't agree with you more. Before I got involved with the International Council for Men and Boys, in 2019, I became a devout, a passionate volunteer of a group called the Campaign for Greater Father Family Involvement here in Pennsylvania. And in 2022, we passed the Greater Father Family Involvement Act, but we're still working for funding. So I couldn't agree with you more. I'm well aware of all the brutal statistics of father absence. You gave a whole bunch in your intro, and another one you did, that you didn't mention, but of course it's strongly implied, that all the mass shooters were all father absent. This epidemic it's, you know, one common denominator was they did not have fathers in their lives.
Right. Well, it's interesting. Daniel Patrick Moynihan, back in 1965, he was a senator, and he made a profound statement that is echoed down to our times. He said, regarding this very issue, we are defining deviancy down. That was his statement, defining deviancy down, and that was when fatherlessness was less than half of what it is now.
Right.
So this is, there is not a mystery to understanding the crisis that we're in. The mystery is why we're not willing to deal with it. Why we're not really willing to deal with it. And a lot of it has to do with politics and power. All right, the next one is false allegations. We've alluded to that. Give us a further insight from your viewpoint why false allegations is a major issue. What are the 12 major issues that men are having to deal with?
Well, you were well aware of this. I think you said in California that letter was written 40 years ago.
Yeah.
So, of course, that judge was aware of it, and this is since the beginning of time.
Yeah. And by the way, he was a great judge. He really was. He spoke the truth.
He would have to be for writing a letter like that.
Exactly.
But what made it worse, so part of what the problem was is that women were disbelieved because we didn't want to believe how unpleasant things were in the work environment and in some areas. So, listen, I don't want to criticize the Me Too movement. I want to applaud that women speak out and are believed when they are telling the truth. But the problem is society feels guilty about what they ignored, problems they ignored. And then there's that overcorrection. You know, believe the women who were telling the truth then became believe, as you mentioned, and I'll take your language, believe only women all the time.
Right.
And then that's what
a Supreme Court justice and two Supreme Court justices and a presidential candidate have both had to face this backlash of the Me Too movement.
Sure, and that hopefully that brings more awareness to it. So, and it really harms the true victims.
Yeah.
Because when you make false allegations, it becomes harder for our courts to determine who is telling the truth. And that's part of, as you mentioned, that's item four. And we raise awareness. And the solution, by the way, let's not leave out solutions, is have penalties. There is no – actually, there's penalties on the books. But we don't enforce false allegations or the allegations in family court. There's absolutely no enforcement from a judicial standpoint or from a prosecutorial standpoint. We just accept that they're made and it's part of family court. And to our own societal destruction.
Let's put this in perspective. As lawyers, we know about this history. But if you were to go back 50 years, about 50 years, at that time, men almost invariably got custody of their children in a divorce. It was a given. Men got custody of their children. Today, and starting about 40 years ago, all of a sudden, the social, shall we say, corrections took place and went overboard and gave women, mothers, the custody of the children almost without question. How did such a thing take place? It was a massive social change that actually had the effect of saying, men, you don't matter. The only ones that matter are women. You're out of here.
So I think that was a social contract to fight ERA, to fight equal pay. Society recognized that we were still in a male-dominated workforce where men were working and women were raising the children. And then we had, as you know, as an attorney, something called that tender years doctrine because the mothers were nurturing. And judges.
And there's truth to that.
The judges didn't want to rip a three-month-old or a one-year-old away from the mother and keep that old.
Right.
You know, where women are fighting. You know, we had that civil rights big movement. Mm-hmm. And so women were marching, and how that was fought was this implicit or explicit. I'm not sure. We're going back. The olden days, we're going back into the ancient days when you were. Now I'm only teasing. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that there was part of that social compromise was that men would still, you know, that there wasn't, they didn't have that ERA law passed. And one thing that women got was they got the strength in the divorce. The judges gave the women the benefit of the doubt in family court.
Always, yeah. Okay, so we know that has engendered false allegations. The last major case that I handled in Southern California before I answered the call of God to come to the birthplace of the nation to launch this program was a custody case. And it involved two women, a mother and a grandmother, who both professed to be strong Christians. And they, because I was reputed to have to be a strong Christian lawyer, that brought truly biblical principles to bear in the cases, they came to me like so many others. And the contention was that the husband and father had been sexually abusing a daughter. Now, I didn't find any evidence of that in particular, but that was the allegation. It was made so strongly. So I took the case and began representing the mother and by default, so to speak, the grandmother who was in on this. Well, I had to go to court at least six or seven times concerning further orders to show cause and so on concerning all of this, and it continued to accelerate. By the time I left the practice and turned the case over, the last information I had was that the court actually said, you know what? These are false allegations. There is no substance to support these. And guess what the court did? Took the child away from the custody of the mother and gave the child to the custody of the father. That's how, in the long run, many courts would deal with this inequality. Have you experienced that?
I have to tell you, thanks for asking. I was not a family law lawyer. I went through a bitter, high-conflict, 10-year custody battle as a lawyer, where there was really nothing to argue about.
Uh-huh.
You know, this should have been a shared custody situation, but for whatever reason, and I and my ex, we were both butchered in the system, and I see problems with the system that could make things easy and didn't, and it would have bankrupted me.
And there are those who make a profit on that. So we won't talk about that.
But I was able to represent myself. So
well, good for you.
Get that in.
All right, friends, we're talking very really here. This is a very real conversation, not theoretical. This is the real world. We'll be right back to talk about the matter of men and boys.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, "I'll build my church." Is Christ by His Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, "Behold how they love one another." Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Again, I welcome you back to Viewpoint, friends. We're talking with Larry DeMarco. He is a veteran lawyer. Has also personally experienced an awful lot of these issues which he just revealed in our conversation. There are so many things in the promotional piece that I have received concerning the effect of, shall we say, the war against men, labor force. Problems can be traced to the declining labor force participation of men. U.S. Senator Marco Rubio's landmark report, The State of the Working and Non-Working Man, highlights the alarming decline in male labor force participation in recent decades. How the absence of men from the workforce leads to a reduction in overall economic productivity, increases welfare dependency. And other countries are experiencing this as well. It's not just America. What's going on here, Larry?
So I want to credit Marco Rubio for issuing a report on this and raising awareness with his report a few years ago. But the World Bank quantified this workforce issue, which is also can be traced right to how boys were falling behind in school, and therefore they don't get as good a job. And the difference in their schooling leads to a 1.3% nationwide or worldwide, really, global decrease in productivity per year. If you project that out over a decade, that's a productivity increase of 13.9%, almost 14%, which is the impact, the negative economical impact on society of the educational system that's leaving boys behind.
Well, this issue is also impacting national security, isn't it?
Sure. It used to be so honorable to be masculine, to be male, to protect, to join the military and to serve your country. But now, when you think of man or masculine, there's that word, that horrible word and phrase, toxic masculinity, which then results in men not feeling pride and self-esteem in having a masculine position like serving in the military. And so now for a decade, we are not recruiting, where the 35-point decline in male recruits between 2013 and 2023.
Well, it's because of the war, even within the military, the Pentagon, against men in order to play the cultural game of lifting up the practice of homosexuality and transgenderism, plus bringing more and more women into the military. This whole issue has come before us in just the last 2 weeks with regard to the nomination of Pete Hegseth there for the Department of Defense. And what they're saying is, well, he wrote something or said something about not having women in combat. Well, yes, he did. He didn't want women on the front lines because he did not think that was the appropriate place for women. He wasn't saying don't have women in the military. He said the best place for them is not on the front lines. So guess what? The Women First movement got in there and tried to make hay over this and drive the man out of nomination. I mean, this is real right in front of us this very week.
We're reaping what we sowed in the decades media bias and war against men, as eloquently put. And people don't understand. Well, so if you can't recruit a complete armed forces, now you have a national security issue.
Yeah, and it's multiplied when you're short 35%. Of the people that are needed to man, shall we say, or take the leadership in these various roles in the military, you're in deep trouble, especially with all that's going on in our world today.
That's right. Well, I think there's better times ahead. You know, one thing we celebrate is that before this election, there was a huge issue between the difference in the gender divide in the two candidates. And, you know, I don't mean to get political, but you have one political party that said we are for 16 groups, one of which was women, and all the other ones were minority groups. And you have another candidate who is emphasizing his masculinity and, you know, touting maleness, or has a deep understanding, you know, courting male podcasters, or that messaging was male friendly. And so that, you know, we always thought, well, women are the ones that come out to vote and that's going to drive the election, or that was at least the public narrative. So we somewhat celebrate that men stood up and voted, or that they're credited, that the gender divide is credited with the election in large part.
Yeah, it's interesting. So gender is being used as a weapon, not as a legitimate discussion for reality, for health, for safety, for any of the things that really matter. No, it's all about warring for gender, making gender a political and spiritual battle out there. And indeed, you know, if you go back to Genesis chapter 3, God warned us about this. He said, because of what happened in the Garden of Eden, where Eve succumbed, was deceived by Satan, and Adam then followed suit, because if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. Then God said, okay, here's what's going to happen. Get ready. Yeah, the men are going to work by the sweat of their brow, but women are going to have kids, and their desire is going to be to their husbands to rule over them. That's what God said. And that's exactly what's happening. And that battle is going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And actually, it's destroying our very country, I think.
Well, I applaud you in your ministry for promoting strong families and the men and women and the nuclear family staying together and living the good Christian life. I as well believe that part of way of curing society's ills is, hey, let's, you know, I actually teach pre-Cana with my wife, and I believe that part of all the solutions, again, I like to be solution focused, and part
exactly.
of the solution is stay out of family court, stay married, learn how to live together, and recognize that what makes men and women happy is a good, strong family and a good relationship with one another.
Absolutely, my brother. Absolutely. And so we're articulating different sides of the same coin here. And what we find interesting is, and you state in your book, in your paper here, that boys, young men, are afraid to get married. Well, this is being recorded by the statisticians and those who are observing, secular observers, that in fact there's a failure to launch, they call it the failure to launch among millennials and Generation Z. Why? Because they're afraid of the consequences of this battle of the sexes. It ain't pretty.
Absolutely. I also want to comment that women who don't marry are also equally dissatisfied with their lives. You have women who, you know, it's easy for us to talk about men. I also think women are also afraid to get married because they don't want to lose their careers. Again, we're still in that me society, or they see the same fears. So both genders don't want to be vulnerable and don't want to be in a loving, committed relationship, because that's when you're vulnerable, and that's where they see that they're susceptible to having the same divorce that their parents went through.
I have several grandchildren who are in their maritable ages now, between 20 and 30. And as I listen to them, both male and female, you know what their big issue is? I can't find a man or a woman that I can honor and respect, take their relative biblical position in the household. Can't find it. Can't find men who will be spiritual leaders and who will live up to it. Can't find women who aren't going to be in, completely taken over by the culture and refuse to understand the relationship between men and women as described in the Bible. That's their concern.
Same with my young cousins. I have a vast majority of my family who are also passing child-rearing age, both men and women, mm-hmm. who are single and are not in committed relationships nor necessarily looking for one. It's sad, it's a problem, and it needs to be reversed. And I applaud people like yourself who are in marriage ministries or relationship ministries and teaching men and women how to communicate, how to compromise, and how to have strong marriages with their spouses.
All right, Larry, you're bringing all this to us here, and that's very important. That's why I wanted to bring you on the program. What would you want people to do in response, any particular response to your coming on the program today?
So several things. You're getting deep, and I don't – well, just it's a loaded question. So the short answer is celebrate Men's Equality Month every November. Acknowledge International Men's Day on November mm-hmm. 19th, mm-hmm. and we're raising awareness to – we're trying to change the narrative that when you think of gender equality, it's not gender equality for women. It's gender equality for both sexes, also for men and boys. And that's mm-hmm. why we use our hashtag gender equality for men. On our website, on the homepage, we have the 12 areas of male inequality, and it's too much to get in a closing word. But I will say that there are solutions in each and every item. We promote policies and we work with the community and all our stakeholders, so we look to society for solutions. We are not only we're looking for experts who also raise solutions. So it's not just saying there's a problem, it's being solution focused, and there you can find our solutions on the website. We invite people to come in, join the wave, and sign up to get our mailers.
And give us that website.
menandboys.net. Thank you for asking.
menandboys.net. That's pretty simple. menandboys.net. Now, friends, I've made allusion to the book Hearts of the Fathers, Leaving a Legacy That Lasts. This is a book that does provide answers, does provide solutions, particularly with regard to our families and with regard to God's view of men with regard to leadership with their father, with their kids and with their wives. That's where it's got to begin. You've got to have a vision. Where there's no vision, the people perish. You can throw all the money you want at it. It doesn't make any difference if you don't have the vision to be a doer of the word and not just a hearer. So it's a $23 hardbound book, yours for $20 on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org, again, Hearts of the Fathers, Leaving a Legacy That Lasts. $20 on our website, saveus.org. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check, add $6 for postage and handling, and we'll bet this heart-changing, life-changing, home-changing, marriage-changing, family-changing book in your hands. What a gift this would be to your family. What a gift this would be to your family. Larry, so much, so glad to have you here on the program here today. Two lawyers. It's amazing how God would raise up two lawyers to talk about such an important issue, isn't it?
Yes. Well, I want to thank you for inviting me. It's been an honor and a pleasure to be a guest on your program, and I hope to be on again, and I look forward to following you and all your ministry work.
Well, that's great. Stay on afterward. I think we have a few things to talk about just personally together. And thank you, my dear friends, for becoming a partner. Become a partner to Save America Ministries, the Viewpoint Radio broadcast. Go to our website, saveus.org. Make your generous gift that way. This is a time for us to really get serious about making a difference. It's not just putting a new president in office. It's becoming the people that God wants us to be. We'll be back with you tomorrow. God bless and be a blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.